Hi, this is Steve Worona, and you're listening to the February edition of EDUCAUSE Live Spotlight on Identity Management. Before I introduce today's guests, here's a brief orientation to the technology we're using, an interface called Wimba Open Room. Your browser right now is showing the title slide for today's talk. In the lower left-hand corner of your screen is the word to, followed by a colon, and then a drop-down list currently displaying the word all. To the right of that drop-down list is a blank line where you can type a message. To send a message to the general chat area, first make sure the drop-down list does still say all, and then type your message into the blank line and hit enter. That's how you'll ask a question or make a comment during today's session. Just send it to the general chat area, and we'll respond to as many of your messages as we can over the course of the hour. You can also send a private message to anyone else that's logged on. To do that, just select the recipient from the drop-down list before typing your message. One of the names you'll find in that list right now is EDUCAUSE Help. If you run into any technical problems, send a private message to that name and they'll assist you. And finally, if you missed part of today's conversation, or if you want to see some or all of it again, all EDUCAUSE Live events are archived on the EDUCAUSE Live website, including both audio and video. Feel free to come back as often as you like. We also have a copy of our speaker's slides linked from the webpage for this EDUCAUSE Live session. And now to today's webcast. Each of our monthly Spotlight on Identity Management events features two speakers from a campus that's analyzing or solving an identity management problem in a way we think you'll find instructive. Today, my guests are Carl Hines and David Walker from the University of California Office of the President. Carl Hines is the Director of Information Technology Audit Services with over 25 years of business and systems experience. As a manager for Deloitte & Touche, he advised and audited many banking, manufacturing, public utility, and nonprofit clients. Later, he reestablished the Stanford University internal IT audit function and led Stanford's Y2K readiness project and the implementation of Stanford's first Oracle application. Carl has taught accounting, finance, and computer science at the University of South Carolina, Midlands Technical College, Chapman University, and California State University, Stanislaus. He graduated with a Master's of Accountancy from the University of South Carolina. He's a certified public accountant, a certified management accountant, and a certified information specialist. David Walker is the Director of Advanced Technology at the University of California Office of the President. He's currently involved with strategic planning for various areas of information technology management, including federated identity management, research, cyber infrastructure, and system-wide IT architecture. In previous positions, he's been the Director of Technologies for the California Digital Library and the Director of Telecommunications at UC San Diego. He also managed the creation of UC Irvine's campus network and web services. Carl and David, welcome to EDUCAUSE Live. I believe Carl is going to kick things off.
Thank you, Steve. What we're going to talk about today is we're first going to try and review the environment that David and I are working in, and then talk a little bit about the UC Trust, which is the UC version of identity management, and some of the impact that it's had on the stakeholders and how their roles have changed as a result of the implementation of an identity management system. So if you go on to slide two, the University of California consists of 10 campuses, 3 national labs, 5 medical centers. However, most of the operational responsibilities for each campus, payroll, student systems, is at the individual campuses. Campuses have a lot of autonomy in terms of their information systems processing. And this even goes beyond the IT department. It's very common that there'll be major systems that are not under the control of our CIO on the individual campus. As a result of our implementation, each campus has its own identity management system, which is federated or works with the other identity systems through the UC campuses. Now, UC in general has very few centralized services. Each campus has its own general ledger, its own payroll, its own student systems, and they manage their systems locally. But there are a few systems that are central. For example, one is our employee self-service and benefit system. We're all paid generally from the same type of payroll system, and our benefits with the university are the same throughout the system. Also, the most licensed library materials are centralized. And then there's quite a number of multi-campus collaborations. For example, if you It's not unusual for a many of the systems that are in development, that even though they're developed by a single campus, to be shared by numerous campuses. For example, our Will Body program or our effort reporting systems are developed and shared throughout the system, with each campus somewhat having the ability to modify it locally. And David, at this point, why don't you talk about the secure online environment?
Sure. what we are, the UC Trust project started a few years ago, and what we realized is that we were having an increase in the number of online services available to the relatively extended university community. These are vary in different areas. There are academic services. Carl mentioned the library services. Many of the campuses are moving sort of from departmental level course management systems to campus level course management systems. There are, of course, a lot of interest in gaining access to services offered by federal agencies, in particular the granting agencies. So in the academic area, there's also a lot of interest in collaboration tools and other things. But this slide number four that we're on is really talking about representative applications. On the administrative area, from a system-wide point of view, we're moving to implement a travel system for the whole university for booking travel. There's an employee training system that's just coming up now, and in fact, I expect this will be increasing as on the multi-campus collaboration front. There's a subset of our campuses that are starting to look at the quality system. So there's a growing interest in sharing resources. And while identity management by itself isn't everything that you need, it's certainly necessary before you can move into that. And then, in particular, there is what many of us might call an administrative system, but I classify it as personal on the thing, which is employee benefits. And I called it personal because it's managing my money and not the university's money. The university is a steward of my money. So that moves us on to slide five to talk about At Your Service Online, which is this employee self-service application. It allows me to change my tax withholding, to change benefits, retirement, things like that, and it was our first flagship application for UC Trust. So it is one of the centrally operated systems, it's been in operation for a while, with its own local authentication and identity management infrastructure. Obviously, since it's employees, it was closely related to the payroll system and the hiring process. potentially, some employees, not me, but some employees might have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the retirement system. It's an area where the people with the fiduciary responsibility, the benefits department here at UCLP, were very concerned that we not do anything that threatens the integrity of that system and the security. They didn't want the wrong people moving, and I don't want the wrong people moving my retirement money around. So essentially, this is an application that requires a high level of identity assurance. And we spent a lot of time in the creation of UC Trust in developing standards, which I'll get to later in the talk, but developing operational standards and getting review by various stakeholders to ensure that UC Trust was going to meet the level required by At Your Service Online. That made the project take longer than maybe all of us thought it would, but it had the nice effect that coming out the far end, many of these other systems, travel, employee training, just fall in. It is now accepted as a trusted source of information about the members of the university community. In addition to the high level of identity assurance, I might mention that there are issues of other operational issues, help desk coordination, coordinating log management between identity providers and service providers to support investigations. It's either if something went wrong or if somebody did something wrong, that we would be able to track that down. And as I said, and then other measures in general to deal with the legal and fiduciary compliance issues there.
This is a great application, and it's used by every single employee. If you want to change your 401k withholding, you can sign on and do that. You can review your retirement status. It's gotten several awards internal to the university. And it's used throughout the entire university, same system, and is a great system.
Yeah.
And so it's a natural for the first identity management system, or UC Trust.
Yeah.
The problem, not just with AYSO on your service, but as we're looking at the university as an auditor or as an individual, with all these people that are establishing their systems, as I said, not only within the IT organizations, but outside of the IT organizations, each one has developed their own access management. So looking at this application-centric application management, access management, when somebody leaves the organization, often that information doesn't get translated into taking that person out of the system. So from an audit perspective, when we go out there and look, many of the systems still have people that have left the university, but they still have access to production systems. In addition, sometimes when we're doing an investigation or when somebody has left under the less than the best of circumstances, we need to remove that individual's access from all systems immediately. This is very difficult when you're talking about 20 or 30 different applications and you don't know which ones that people have IDs of. And the identity management system in one of our locations is advanced enough to where when we had a situation and we needed to revoke somebody's ID, revoke their access to all of the production systems, they were able to do that in just a couple of minutes with one small change. Each system that is developed within the university traditionally has its own level of access, its own level of control, its own level of managing this access, and everyone is different. The passwords controls are different. The security related to the access is different. And so this is a challenge that we have out there. And then as a personal thing, users must maintain multiple passwords. They need a password for every production system that they're going to use. I myself, not using many production systems, maintain about 15 or 20 passwords. It seems like every time I turn around, there's another password I need to remember. And that makes it difficult for the users, and it makes it difficult for users to create a good password to be able to use. And each application on top of that must design, build, and maintain an identity management infrastructure, which is not cheap. It's not as though you can share it from one to the other. So identity management, I see, as being a real solution to some of these problems that have plagued us over the years.
Yeah. Looking at now we're on slide 7, what do we need here? Well, essentially what we need is what we needed within when identity management was part of each application, except that by separating them, we have to develop a sense of trust through all of this. So, by separating, you make it clearer what the needs are, I think. What we need is trustworthy exchange of identity attributes between identity providers and service providers, and that comes in a lot of areas. The exchange needs to be private. It needs to protect the privacy of the information appropriately. It needs to be reliable so that the systems remain highly available, or at least as highly available as they need to be. The organizations have to be the attributes that are being sent need to be trustworthy, which says something about the back end maintenance of all of this information within the identity provider. So in general, this trust environment, there are really three parties in all of this. We usually think of identity providers and service providers, but we saw three, and the third being the community members, all of us that use these systems. So service providers are trusting identity providers to provide correct identity information, So it's up to the identity providers to synchronize with repositories of record and do this in a timely manner. As Carl mentioned, if somebody leaves the organization, you need to be able to remove their permissions quick in a timely manner. Well, that means that all of this needs to work well, and the not just the technology systems, but the organizations that run these services need to be responsive in dealing with the things. Identity providers have to trust service providers not to misuse information that is sent to them. Social security numbers are always the thing that widen people's eyes in the security world these days. We don't actually exchange social security numbers through UC Trust, but the fact is that there is information sent to service providers that may need protection in itself, and so the identity provider, as a custodian of that information, has a responsibility of protecting it, but they've just handed it to some other service that's presumably supported by another organization. So you need a way of vetting and knowing that the service provider also is going to provide the right protections. And then the community members, they have to trust the identity providers not to reveal information inappropriately, and they have to trust the service providers not to misuse it. I realize that it's not on the slide here, but also the identity providers and service providers trust community members not to share their credentials, their logins and passwords with other people.
Yeah, if they were to share their passwords, they'd be able to get access to all of the systems that it gives it.
Exactly. So the community members do have responsibilities too, because there's nothing that identity providers or service providers can do when one of their users gives somebody else the password. And the other thing I'll mention is that UC Trust is a federated system, because UC, while it's a single legal entity, really acts more like a federation, if you probably got the sense from Carl's discussion earlier. But really, in all of this discussion here, the fact that it's federated is really incidental. It just means that you have multiple identity providers. All these issues would exist anyway.
And it works better like that as a system, too, you have multiple identity providers. That way, each campus can maintain the identities, and they can be sharing across campuses. It seems to make sense.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. We're listening to Carl Heinz and David Walker from the University of California Office of the President talking about the challenges of creating an identity management infrastructure for the University of California, an extremely complex organization with 10 campuses, 3 national labs, 5 medical centers. I want to ask a little bit about that, but if you have some questions for Carl and David, type them into that blank line at the lower left-hand corner of your screen. We've got a couple of breaks planned during this presentation. One will be able to ask the questions. You were both talking about federation a minute ago, and federated identity management in the last several years, let's say, has just seen an explosion. But I wonder what you had underway before that, before there was before 10 Klingenstein invented the phrase federated identity management, how were you guys planning to solve the problem, David?
The UC Trust project is kind of a phoenix that rose out of the ashes of an earlier project that was called the Common Authentication Project, or the PKI project, and that. Existed. It was a 5-year project, and I think we were about 4 years into it. And when the university embarked on it, it was very forward-looking, thinking about how the issue of having services that can be accessed throughout the system. There was planning done within a PKI hierarchy of each campus managing its own community. We didn't use the word federated. But it was in that sense federated, and it didn't really happen. The various reasons why you could talk about it, I think the main one, though, is that if you look back now 7 or 8 years ago, I think all of us thought that PKI was going to be the way that all of us were going to be identified to applications. That hasn't happened. I mean, it's a good technology. It's there. It's used in a number of good applications. It really hasn't happened. So around 3 years ago, there was actually a fairly fiery discussion at a meeting of the campus CIOs, and a decision was made to end the PKI project. Then a couple of us went away and said, okay, well, let's look back at what we thought we needed to do a few years ago and ask ourselves, you know, where are we now? And what we found was that we still had all the same problems that we had at that time. So, but this was also right as the Shibboleth project was starting. And that model was really a lot better for us. As I said, the university acts more like a federation. So a federated identity management infrastructure makes a lot more sense for us, and it seems to be working.
This project, I think, has some legs under it, a lot more so than the previous project did. And the David, part of it, I think, is your credit that you've managed a project plan, and you've planned, you've organized, you measure the folks to where they are, and when they aren't there, you see what needs to be done to make corrections.
I embarrass them in public meetings.
So, a lot of this is not just the technology; it's also about the people, which I think has been key to moving this project forward, and is key for any implementation of a security federated security project. So, yeah.
Let me squeeze in one more question during this break. Somebody wonders if the university has a single ERP, can identity management be federated? Carl, do you want to take that one?
A single ERP, and you're talking about an enterprise-wide.
A single people software. Yeah, right. Exactly.
I think it could. You got to remember, the university, even though it has an ERP system, it's got tons of other systems there that aren't financially based. So the need for a federated system is there, and I think some of the more modern ERP systems are allowing. The use of a shared identity. David, you might know a little bit more about the use of PeopleSoft and identity management.
The thing to make clear is that the kinds of things that ERPs do are the kinds of things that we do on our campuses. So there's not a single ERP for the whole university. That does create issues. It's hard for us to have. We do have a way of identifying employees uniquely and stably as they move around the university from campus to campus, but it doesn't even work well for students. But I don't think. I think if you thought it through, the fact that you have federated identity management doesn't preclude the ERP. The issue that you have to do is remember that the identity management shouldn't think of it as linked to any one application. So the ERP just becomes one of the service providers that you're linking with. Now, an ERP, for example, that runs your personnel system is also going to be a major source of information for the identity management system feeding in. Your ERP may also be your student system, which means that it is a very large part of your identity management system, but you probably have people that are members of your community that aren't employees or students either. So you're probably not going to do all of your identity management within an ERP.
And then you also have like the ASYO system, which wouldn't be part of that. And then we have a lot of web applications that wouldn't be part of a ERP system that I think the identity management system would be extremely valuable.
Okay.
Of course, as the University of California, we're nowhere close to having a centralized ERP system. Each campus has their own. So.
Right.
And David, I think your earlier comment falls into a long thread that took place on the identity management mailing list within the past month or two called, I think it was something along the lines of falling into the ERP trap, where various campuses were sort of identifying their ERP system with their identity management system. And because the ERP
right.
system.
And I think a lot of ERPs are sold with a module that's called identity management. But just remember that you can give something a name, and it may not be everything that you need it to be.
Tremendous. I am going to hang on to the rest of the questions that have come in. Don't despair. We will ask them before the end of the session. But in the meantime, just to stay on our timeline a little bit, I'm going to turn the floor back to David at slide 8.
Okay. And I guess I'll be talking about UC Trust now. The next few slides are really just to give you some background on what UC Trust is. We've been alluding to it, we've given it a name so far. as I mentioned, it came out of, it was the phoenix out of the ashes of the PKI project, and it meant that we went back to the roots and said, what do we really need to accomplish here? And what we want are system-wide agreements for the exchange of identity information, and we want that to have a common set of requirements, among all the campuses. And that's, UC Trust has become that. And I think there is a URL that's provided for UC Trust where you can see the document that this defines all the requirements and things like that, and has a lot of other resources there. But it's the idea is that we're creating trust and identity attributes through policy and the execution of policy, I'll say. Actually, execution and verification when we get to Carl's part at the end. So anyway, the policy controls the creation and maintenance and release of information by the identity providers. The technology enforces the policy, implements and enforces the policy, and also the technology, the shibboleth technology that we use, ensures it does ensure secure transit of the attributes. So you don't need to trust anybody other than the identity provider and the service provider. And really, at the time that we made the decision to use shibboleth, I don't believe that In Common had been created or named yet, but we could see that something was happening there. And one of our very early decisions, because we did consider other technologies coming out of the PKI project, but what we wanted was something that didn't stop working when we left UC. We wanted something that integrated nationally and internationally in a natural way. So in fact, as UC Trust has developed, we call it a federation here, and in most ways that you would define a federation, it is. But in a technical sense, if you're a shibboleth expert, you'd say, well, it's not a federation at all. It's really just a subset of In Common. And so what we have done is we've made the decision that we will extend In Common, and that we get these higher levels of assurance by simply defining the requirements to issue assertions, identity assertions, at a certain level of assurance. And then we just that those become UC specific attributes that we assert through the In Common infrastructure. So In Common is a prerequisite to certifying to the UC Trust requirements, but it doesn't UC Trust doesn't supplant the operation of In Common or they don't run in parallel or anything. The other comment about our levels of assurance again. Looking towards interoperation in the very broad sense with the rest of the world, we based our UC Trust basic level of assurance on the federal level 2. We wanted, as I said, we were shooting at AYSO. We read through the NIST and the documents defining the federally authentication levels, And we could see that level 2 was the kind of the equivalent of people managing their own accounts with reasonably good amounts of money in them, and so we did that. And I think we'll be very glad now that the federal e-authentication people are starting to be talking about interoperation through In Common. We should be able to map without too much pain. I'm not going to go into the specific requirements and everything, but essentially, if you think about the responsibilities of identity providers and service providers, they're requirements that essentially talk about that make the identity providers authoritative for accurate assertions of attributes about people. The attributes, could be unique identifiers or whatever it is. But the important thing is that the information is accurate, it's timely. And all of that. There's almost no technology requirement. It's mostly about the operational practices and sets minimum standards for that, for establishing credentials and maintaining the identity information that's there. There are also requirements on the service providers that receive the identity attributes to assure that they're being protected to respect the privacy of the community members, which we've talked about before. Let's see, going on to slide 10, Just to talk a little bit about the governance, we're going to in later slides we're going to talk about the stakeholders in the political process of getting here, but the group that sits above UC Trust is what we call the IT Leadership Council, ITLC. It's the body of the campus CIOs. And it provides oversight, conflict resolution, anything like that among the campuses. That's the group that provide, you know, is moving to provide governance to a number of things. UC Trust is kind of the first one where we've done that formally, but that's happening. In order to have a more informal exchange among people that are directly responsible for the operation of these systems, though, we created a UC Trust work group, which meets a little more frequently than the ITLC, and of course the meetings are specifically on identity management. And that group has a looser membership. We do have official contacts from the campuses, but the meetings of the UC Trust work group have identity providers, service providers, the people here at the Office of the President that coordinate all of this. And people may come and go, actually. Some people are fairly regular, but you might have a new service that's coming in. They might attend a few meetings and then drop out later and stop attending. So it's very much topic-oriented, and it manages kind of the operational policies and procedures and has a lot of discussions about future directions. Do we need a new attribute? Do we need to tweak the policy a little bit to handle a certain situation? That kind of thing.
This is governance of the UC Trust, not just governance of the implementation of all of UC.
Yeah, this is UC Trust specifically. The ITLC has broader scope, but the UC Trust work group is specifically UC Trust and identity management on the campuses.
Thanks. Someone wonders, David, what off-the-shelf tools are you using?
they're Shibboleth. It really is part of the In Common membership. As far as what each campus uses, that, like a lot of things, that's the responsibility of the campuses. But Sun Identity Manager is used. There's a campus that uses the Tivoli Identity Manager. An interesting thing I've noticed is the campuses that are furthest along tend to have homegrown software. I could speculate why that is. It may simply be that the campuses that are furthest along started before there were really viable commercial options. But anyway, it's kind of the usual cast of characters of what the identity management systems are that people are using.
Carl, someone wonders who convenes the UC Trust group.
Oh, I see. David does. I visited, but I believe David, you actually convene that group and meet it on a regular basis.
Right. The UC Trust administration that's there. It was envisioned as a small group of people here at the Office of the President. I guess it is a small group of people, one of whom is in the process of retiring, and then there's me. It's really, and in fact, one of the operational parts of the administration, I'm going beyond just the meetings, of course, but one of the key operational things is actually an official declaration with digital signatures of the UC Trust certified campuses. Since we're a subset of In Common, no offense to anybody else on the call, but we can't have somebody who isn't from UC asserting our level of assurance. And so we've got a little bit of metadata that we distribute, and it's done that way. And we're actually moving that, instead of being done by a couple of people here at OP, we're actually going to have two groups of two people with this function, because there's an initiator and reviewer kind of process. So we have a separation of duties on the maintenance of that metadata. And those four people come from four different campuses. So I'm one of them, but then we've got three people from three other campuses that we're moving to. So there's actually, and this is a selfish part of the choice of aligning well with In Common, is that a lot of the operational stuff In Common does for us. We don't have to do it. So there's actually a really thin level of keeping the federation here at UC.
Someone wonders, especially in the context of the national labs, if you have HSPD 12 requirements, and I'll prevail upon whoever wants to answer that question to explain what HSPD 12 is. don't jump at once.
I know that it's a set of requirements that apply to the national labs and not directly to the campuses, although of course there's with anything that's federal, there's always speculation that it may apply to us at some point. Right now, we really haven't dealt with that within UC Trust, although it's an interesting question because the Lawrence Berkeley National Labs is in the process. They have joined in common. They haven't certified the UC Trust yet, but they're in the process of doing that. That's as an identity provider. Which means that HSPD 12 probably doesn't apply so much to the rest of us. It would apply to them, of course. If we started having services that they provided to the rest of the university, though, that I could see where that might happen. But we really haven't dealt with that yet.
Where does the identity manager report, HR or IT, David?
I report in IT. Let me think. In all of the campuses, it's in IT.
I believe it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Is the ID created within the central system and then propagated to different systems, or is it created in each individual system and then uploaded to a central system, David?
Well, I could talk for a long time about identifiers because we've had to deal with that a lot. But I think I mentioned earlier, we have an identifier that stably follows people through the university. That is an identifier that's created by a central system here at OP, doing a little bit of matching. It's actually on Social Security number and birth date. So it's an old system. One that we recognize we need to upgrade. I use that because now I'm going to say it's a batch system that runs overnight, and so on a nightly basis the campuses feed information up to here. There's some matching done. New numbers are assigned as necessary, and then they're sent back. They're called UCNet IDs. That process really only works well for employees because that's where. Through the politics of the university, we've been able to get reliable Social Security numbers and birth dates. The federated nature of the university is such that the registrars treat each other within UC as if we were separate institutions. That's a policy issue for the university, not a legal issue because we're a single legal entity, but that's the case. So, go ahead.
I was going to say the UC Trust is federated throughout that, and there's no roll-up of the identities, is there, David?
No. The UCNet ID is there, and campuses assert it.
Yeah.
And the At Your Service Online application does need it.
Yeah.
But in other applications, we try to avoid that one because, as I said, it doesn't work well for non-employees. So any service that might be used by non-employees, we try to use one of the more federated identifiers that comes with in common, which things like EduPerson principal name or targeted ID or something like that, where we need a unique identifier, but it doesn't have, if somebody happens to show up on more than one campus, it doesn't matter too much if their identifier changes.
Let me squeeze in two more during this break, and this follows on what you were just discussing. Someone wonders, how is presumably inadvertent duplicate identity cleanup performed? David?
It actually turns out to be very rare for us, but it's done, it's basically a manual process. And, an interesting thing is that while we were creating this UCNet ID for a long time, it was actually a peer with the old PKI project. It wasn't used on the campuses until we started UC Trust. And so we did have, maybe 5 or 10 identities on each of the campuses, which are, tens of thousands of people in their community. We had a few that we had to fix up of employees. We also found that we had thousands of students that were mismatched and that, that we just decided, okay, it's not useful for students. So anyway, it's a manual process of fixing it up. And as I said, we really try to restrict use of it to applications that need it, and At Your Service Online is very closely tied application-wise to this system that assigns UCNet ID, so we don't need to worry about propagating the fact that somebody's identifier has changed. That may differ for us going forward, I don't know, but right now it hasn't been an issue.
And one more this break. Carl, what type of identity proofing requirements do you require before a student account is issued? And let me, without turning this into a whole separate lecture, generalize it into non-student accounts, but also campus by campus. That is, does each campus have the ability to sort of do its own level of identity proofing?
In terms of the identity proofing for the students, that's the campus that I'm most familiar with does that through the student registration system. And so when the student registers and is accepted as a student, they're given an ID that could be that they can then use on that particular campus. And I'm not familiar with all of them, but I believe, David, you do have fairly strict standards for the process of adding people that are students as well as employees.
We have strict standards for the people who receive the UC Trust level of assurance, UC Trust basic level of assurance. On most of our campuses, most students would not pass. And so UC Trust, early on we realized we had to support different people at different levels of assurance. And in fact, most students, the services that we offer to students anyway, don't seem to require a higher level of assurance. Again, that might change, although I believe that as we introduce those, the issue is that students can be admitted on some campuses without actually showing up in person with a picture ID. That is possible for students to be admitted that way. So to bring in a stronger form of identity management for students would be difficult. But so we just say you have to know which ones have passed the test and which haven't. And we recognize that many students do not. It can always come up later. Now, there's a special circumstance of a student employee, and the student employee, of course, passes the employee checks. So because they're an employee, that would move them up. But if we started using this for other systems where we needed to get a better identity match, I think we probably would, because it would imply a tighter relationship between the student and the university for those students.
And the registration system or the employee system becomes the system that takes the person off, too.
If they're student employees. But I'm saying students who aren't employees but have some other relationship that we want to use for this. A big one would be financial aid, which is not one of the UC Trust applications right now. But if it were, that is one where in fact we do have a better relationship with the student. The student needs to show up. That needs, we can vet the identities much better.
Sign some papers.
Yeah.
Moving into the home stretch, let me turn it over to Carl at slide 11.
Thank you, Steve. I've had the advantage of sort of sitting back a little bit, watching the process go forward. And one of the things that I see with the identity management system is that there's a few people that can say we can do this on an application. That would be the application owner, for example. But there's a lot of people that can provide roadblocks, intentionally or unintentionally. The major stakeholders in terms of the application owner can say, I'm going to adopt this or not adopt that. And quite often they will look to others in terms of the other people to see if they are approving this or not. Audit, for example, in the case of the CIOs, if it isn't supported by the CIO locally, it would be very unlikely that the application owner would want to participate in this. I think currently we have a great support by the CIOs. In terms of the academic senate, they've been relatively neutral from what I can so far on this. But if they were to come out and say this identity management system is something that shouldn't be done, this could provide a roadblock to it. So as I see this going forward, I see the people that can say, okay, economically I can buy this, I can do this. There are people that they can put technical roadblocks in place, and then you have to understand. Who can put these roadblocks in place, and you have to navigate this very carefully. In the case of the we have here, in terms of the stakeholders, the application owner being primary, They're the ones that would adapt it to their application, working with the people that are supporting that. And this may not be by the applications that are supported by the local CAOs. The identity provider being a key stakeholder, being the person that actually provides the identity, the CIOs in terms of supporting it, the academic senate in terms of not saying not to do this, and we would hope for a little bit of support for that. The vice chancellors of administration, which in many cases are the ones funding the applications owners as they move forward, and the controllers examining the controls of the identity management system and hopefully recommending that it would be an improvement. Legal counsel, particularly as we move into things such as e-discovery, have become much more involved in some of the aspects of identity and identity management and access to systems. So it's a lot of consensus that has to be built. It requires policy, implementation of standards, but more even than that, understanding who can throw a roadblock in front of the system and then who can actually bypass that roadblock.
And I might mention that it's not just roadblocks, it's people that can actually just set roadblocks aside. And we did have some people, for example, within the Vice Chancellors of Administration that were useful. I might comment that while the Academic Senate probably didn't actively do things, they were more than just not being a roadblock. They were actually very supportive of this because we worked mostly with a technology subcommittee of the entire Academic Senate, and they saw the problems that existed because we didn't have an infrastructure to deal with this.
But it's really about to move this project forward. It's very much about people, and you have to understand the roles that are changing. In terms of the service provider or the person who has the application, they traditionally have managed their own identity management, and they're having to give that up to a third party if you adopt an identity management system. This is an interesting process, and in going through AYSO, I know there were some real concerns in terms of the management of the AYSO project, whether it would be acceptable, whether it was right. This was not an easy decision for them to do, to give up something that they already had control of. The identity providers are dependent upon the service providers. They're providing them information related to this. They want to make sure the service providers are handling this well. There again, we're not talking about an official, but we're talking about two people in a room talking to each other, developing a relationship and a trust to make this project move forward, or at least this is what I see, along with the other pieces to make this happen. So they're codependent upon availability, because if the identity provider is down, the service provider can't let people use this application. Problem resolution, security investigation, all of this becomes more complex with an identity management system. So, and it's not also the end users, because the end users now have one password or one identity that gives them access to a larger. They need to protect those credentials, hopefully more than they have in the past. So there is a change related to how people sort of are doing business in the past. We've traditionally looked at us as having a owner of a system and then a custodian of the system, being the IT group supporting that. Now we have three parties that are involved: the owner of the system, the IT support, and the identity provider, which are very likely three different people. Now, as an auditor, I see that audit can and should have a role. First of all, possibly being on the project to make sure that the project development is handled well, that the proper plans are put in place and the controls are done and it moves forward. But the second thing that I see is that identity management is by far a better system for handling the identities of people that need access to our production systems. And so as a result of that, because I'd like to see the controls improved within our organization as well as other organizations, I feel that I'm an advocate for better controls. So I'm an advocate for the identity management system. And then while the details haven't been worked out, realizing that the service providers and the identity providers have limited spans of control, and they need to trust each other Audit can and potentially provide a level of assurance through an independent review periodically of the service providers as well as the identity providers to validate that the controls are in place and that the assurances and trusts that are given by the individuals are indeed based upon facts and that the proper controls are being followed. So,
yeah. And I might mention this issue of the independent verification of the operational practices, the audit process, has become part of the service offering at UC Trust. One of the things an identity provider particularly can tell a service provider is that we are audited at least every 2 years. And it was actually Carl that first cast it as part of the service offering as opposed to a verification, but it's very much the case. And knowing that somebody else is verifying all the things that the other party has said increases trust, and that's what you need to do.
And not only that, somebody who's independent, because while I'm in the same building as David, I'm reporting up through the regions directly, and so I have the advantage of being independent from the IT organization. But And then last, as I've watched this process take place, the people that are the service providers, the AYSOs, and the identity providers, we'd like to think that every decision is made based upon logic. And while I feel that the identity system provides a much more logical argument for moving to that, there's also some other things that I have historically seen, and in this case, were instrumental in terms of the adoption of the plan for the use of identity management in this system. One is that the UC Trust people, that they were not just lackadaisical in terms of being able to deliver, but they were passionate about being able to deliver. They felt that they could deliver. They were standing behind their product, and they gave a sense to the AYSO management that they were indeed going to be good partners to deal with in the future. That there was agreement from outside experts. For example, the fact that there were federal standards, that this was a proper change for them to make. And I think most of all is as they looked across the table, the management of the service provider, AYSO, and the management of the ID providers, primarily David and the people that are part of the project, is they saw them as peers, as people that they could trust and that on a personal basis as well as a professional basis had confidence that the identity system would work for them. So it wasn't just an easy decision. And there were a number of discussions I had with both the service providers and the identity providers as this thing has gone forward in terms of saying this is the right thing to do, so it has gone forward, and there's a lot of advantages I think that we're gonna see as a result of the identity management system. So,
thanks, guys. Let's see if we can wrap up these last few questions that are hanging out there. Is there any future plan for a centralized UC student information system, David?
There's really nothing happening for a centralized student information system at UC right now. The one thing that we have centralized in the student area is the system that people use to apply to the university. But even admissions is a per campus thing.
Yeah, it passes off to the admissions. And I'm not aware of any centralized student system plans in the works. No.
Carl, why isn't student governance a stakeholder in the list of stakeholders that we put up?
Probably should be long term. Now we mentioned some of the top stakeholders there, but anyone who would potentially be included within the identity management system would be a stakeholder. So yeah, you're right. Students should be a stakeholder.
And Carl, while you've got the floor, what type of skill sets are needed from implementation to audit management? You can take the side of the scale from the center off to audit management, and then I'll ask David for the other half of the scale.
For the audit management piece?
Skill sets needed from implementation to audit management. Give the whole range if you like, but I figure you'd want to start with your own side.
in terms of the skill set necessary for auditors working with the identity management system, first of all, is a fairly good technical background, as well as an understanding of audit skills. And your IT auditors tend to be a little bit different than your financial auditors in that they spend a great deal of time maintaining their technical skills. Many of our IT auditors have CISA certification, Certified Information System Auditors. So I think that's sort of a basis to start with. It is sort of an odd deal for a person to be not just a financial auditor, but a CPA, which I am, but also an IT auditor. And it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to maintain those skills.
David, what sorts of skills do you look for when you're looking for people to work with you on this project?
It's an interesting mix because there are certainly technology needs. I mean, LDAP and isn't a requirement for identity management, but is often part of it. The shibboleth technologies are essentially web services and using XML structures and things like that. But I usually figured that you can find the technology expertise that you need if you need to. The real thing is to appreciate that not that much of this is technology. There's a lot of technology, but I'll diminish its importance right now and say that it's really the business practices and being able to integrate into other business processes, figure out how you integrate with the hiring process, for example, or the student admission process and things like that. And so you need somebody that can take not just an enterprise technology point of view, but maybe the enterprise architecture buzz phrase right now, somebody that can think through both the technology and the business process is kind of a continuum. I think that those are probably the kinds of things. Then, of course, if you're trying to do if you're trying to create a federation, you need a lot of patience and the ability to juggle a lot of competing priorities and things like that. But that's a separate thing.
How much of a carrot approach versus a stick approach have you had to use in getting sites certified, making major applications purchases that will interoperate with UC Trust? David?
It's been mostly carrot. I think, and the trick was to select an application that everybody wanted to use. At your service online, everybody has their employees using it. It's legacy identity management has its own set of usernames and passwords, and more of the campuses are trying to bring services to their communities in a way with common single sign-on and things like that. also, the interoperability with federal grant agents is a big draw, particularly, interestingly, in the health sciences It seems to be bringing our medical centers, which typically are even more autonomous than the rest of the university, all of a sudden there's a lot of interest there in how can they participate in this because of things that National Institutes of Health are doing. So it's very much a carrot.
There's very little sticks that the IT organizations have in order to be able to force implementations.
Yeah. I mentioned embarrassing people in public meetings, and I'm not above that. I will go into a meeting of the CIOs and project the status of all the campuses and let them draw their own conclusions, but not, that's more, as I said, public embarrassment than a stick.
Yeah, thinking back to public corporations such as an electric and gas company or a bank, I would see that the CIO would stand up and say, we're going to use identity management, and it would flow down to all of the systems and be adopted. The university, I just don't see that anybody has that authority. The CAOs, as I said earlier, don't have the authority for all the applications on their campus. And so using the stick approach in a university setting would probably not be very productive.
Thanks very much, Carl and David, and thanks to all of our viewers and questioners from around the Internet. You'll shortly be receiving an email asking for your reactions and comments on this EDUCAUSE Live presentation. Please take a minute to reply to that message when it arrives. If you missed any part of today's event, or if you'd like to watch some or all of it again, you'll find both the audio and video in the EDUCAUSE Live archives later today, and you'll also find today's slides linked from the webpage for this EDUCAUSE Live session. Also, be sure to visit the wiki we've set up, where you can describe how your campus is addressing some of the identity management challenges you've heard discussed today, and where you can compare your solutions to those adopted by the University of California. For details, see our Spotlight on Identity Management webpage. Our next EDUCAUSE Live Spotlight on Identity Management will take place on Friday, March 14th. From 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, our speakers will be talking about identity management at Penn State University. We'll hear from Renee Shuey, Senior Systems Engineer, and Joel Widener, Director of Info Systems. And also be sure to tune in on Friday, February 29th for the next event in our regular EDUCAUSE Live series. My guest will be Jim Neal of Columbia University, speaking about relevant key developments in U.S. copyright. EDUCAUSE Live is a production of EDUCAUSE, the Higher Education IT Association. Our executive producer is Cynthia Golden. Special thanks today to Valerie Vogel. This is Steve Worona. See you next time on EDUCAUSE Live.